seventh season of HBO's Game of Thrones came to an end on Sunday night, and it was a weird one. Where were the boobs? Where was the torture? Where was all that Daenerys sits in a throne room half a world away doing nothing content we've come to rely on?
To be fair, she did venture out a bit, as did her bosoms, bathed in candlelight. And speaking of candlelight, what's that smell?
That happened. Also, she met a fella. And lots of other stuff. Battles and a zombie heist, which we will discuss. And an all-staff meeting in a dragon pit that brought all of the show's disparate storylines together at last. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Barry Hardiman. And we're going to have a very spoilery talk about Game of Thrones on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Now, our pals Linda Holmes and Stephen Thompson couldn't pick a Tarly out of a lineup of Tullys. So they begged off, and I, Glenn of House Weldon, first of my name, have seized Historic Studio 44's Iron Throne, which turns out to be more of a knockoff Herman Miller swivel job. And I've invited three avid watchers of the Thrones. See what I did there? Once again, we are deep in spoiler territory here. We are far north of the wall. We're past the Fist of the First Men.
Woo!
And you've already met Barry Hardiman from Weekend Edition. Hey, Barry.
Hi.
Any discussion with Gene Demby of NPR's Code Switch team involved is a better discussion. That's just science. Hey, Gene.
How's it going? What's good?
Very good. And back again, joining us from WBEZ in Chicago, not just because she's awesome, but largely so, from The Verge and the Next Picture Show podcast, Tasha Robinson. Hi, Tasha.
Hi, Glenn.
I think it's useful for everybody to know where we're coming from with this show, and specifically with the books. Have you read them? So I'm going to go around the table. I'm going to ask you each, A, have you read any or all of the books? And B, what are the words of your house? Got that? Let's go in reverse order. Tasha, I suspect I know the answer to this. Have you read the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin?
Are you the three-eyed raven? Because you seem to have seen into my past. Yeah. Well, first of all, my house words are good friends, good food, good Lord, what are you rambling on about?
Uh-huh. Nice.
The Song of Ice and Fire books, like the proverbial hipster who burned his mouth on the pizza, I was into them before they were cool.
Mm-hmm.
I actually read the first Game of Thrones book, I want to say 4 months before it came out. I was a reviewer for a publication called Sci-Fi Weekly at the time, and I was all over it. No, I've been a huge Martin fan since the 1980s. He's been writing longer than that. I was one of those people who haunted used bookstores looking for the out-of-print collections of his short stories. His first novel, Dying of the Light, is one of my all-time favorite science fiction novels, and I was all over the Song of Ice and Fire books.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to mark you down as a yes. Is that okay? Yes.
I didn't know there were check boxes on this one.
Gene, what about you?
The words of House Denby are low battery, 20% battery remaining. We are a very lethargic house. I like to say world weary, but let's go with lethargic. Some people say lethargic. I actually read the first book, A Game of Thrones, but I spent an embarrassing amount of time with the literally millions of YouTube channels explaining, like, the Doom of Valyria.
Right.
And,
sure.
You know, the distance between, like, the Red Keep and Eastwatch by the Bay.
Sure.
It's really, really embarrassing. So I think I have a lot of the backstory.
Cool, cool. Mm-hmm. Now, Barry, how about you?
Words of House Barry are, no book unread, no couch unreclined upon.
Nice.
I, too, am a lethargic house.
Yes.
You know, I was trying to fit a remote control in those words, but anyway. So I am both. I read the books not at all with at the time that Tasha did, but I read them before Dance with Dragons came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I read them pretty much all in one gulp.
Wow.
And I read them when I was sleep training my son. So I was up all night, mm-hmm. you know, feeling crazy. And there's something kind of subversive when you're reading all of these terrible things happening to families. And you're just like, would you go to sleep, damn it? So I found them really, I always recommend them to people mm-hmm. when they're like, you know, trying to, you know, they're like finding their motherhood. It's like, you know what's great? Just like go around the back and like read about the Fist of the First Men and what happened to the child there.
Uh-huh.
So anyway.
All right. I think we got a good mix here because I have read the first book and a half, and then I bailed, not just because it just didn't grab me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it had a map. That's usually what I want in a fantasy book. The other thing I want in a fantasy novel is fantasy. And the reason I bailed is because those first books mm-hmm. are just so concerned with battle, intrigue, and mm-hmm. there's no wizards doing crap. I want some wizards. That's what I need. I need magic. And it's like Homer Simpson says, I've seen plays that were more interesting. Swear to God, plays. It's like, if I wanted to read history, I would read history. I swear to God, history. So I bailed. The words of House Weldon are, there's two because there was a schism. There's House Weldon and House Cars Weldon. So a House Weldon is are you going to eat that? And House Cars Weldon is not in the face. So, those all right, so I think we can all agree that the show is picking up speed now as it barrels toward the end, which is doing a lot of weird stuff to the storytelling. So what's your sense, Gene, of the accelerated pacing of Season 7 compared to previous seasons?
A lot of people have been complaining about the way the season is paced. Everything is moving really fast. Obviously, like, it does feel like there's just, we're moving from set piece to set piece to set piece. And some of that is good, like the big battle where, in which, like, Daenerys shows up and she, like, the dragons kill everyone. That was amazing. It was dope. That was fun. Give me more of that. But it feels like the pace has also meant that some stuff gets stepped on really quickly. Like, you know, like Dany and Jon Snow, we knew that was coming, right? But it just felt like, it didn't feel like there was enough tension, enough buildup. It just felt like, okay, well, this is where we have to get. And so this is where we're going. I empathize with the complaints that people have about, like, the way that, like, distances get collapsed, right? Like, Dany can just be, she can get wherever she wants whenever she needs to get there.
Right.
But I think that's, like, the least of the problems with the plotting this season is the pacing. I think there's some other, like, more ridiculous plot armor things going on. But we'll get to that later.
Okay. Yeah. Barry, how about you?
This might be where being a book person helps a little bit, is that I have been wandering in the woods for so long in this dark wood that it has actually been, you know, I recognize that the storytelling is hugely flawed this season, but it was just so nice to see all the people that didn't know each other know each other. Like, it was great to see Weird Bran hug, like, you know, tall Sansa, and it was great. So, like, I just enjoyed the meeting so much because I haven't, I've been waiting for them for so long. I mean, I knew it was bad for me, but I ate it just the same.
Exactly. How about you, Tasha?
I'm in the same place as Gene, where I really sympathize with the people who are complaining about the speed of the story, in particular because of the nagging possibility that this is going to be the only version of this story we get. I think if Martin had completed the books, I could hand wave a lot of this away, as it's an adaptation and the books are out there. The official version is out there. But as it is, every time they blitz past, for instance, Jaime and Tyrion finally meeting up again, or Brienne and the Hound finally meeting up again in three words of dialogue, I just have this feeling of, can you have given that a little more space to breathe? And there are some weird story glitches where you have, for instance, Illyria and Tyene Sand disappearing into a death trap. If they never appear again, which the actress playing Illyria has said she's not back on the show, Cersei will have been the first villain in history to have put heroes in a death trap successfully and walked away and had nothing more come of it. But at the same time, it really is nice after so many years of delay and Tyrion on a boat asking where whores go. It's like for an entire novel, it's kind of nice to have the contrast of things moving along and coming to a head.
Yeah, let me pick up on that, because for me, I am all about stuff happening. I mean, I'm watching Twin Peaks: The Return, in which nothing is happening, so to go from that to this is great. And I do not understand this criticism about, well, actually, this is quite a far distance, because who cares? Who wants to see people trudging? That's not what I'm tuning in for. I want stuff to happen. But how much of the criticism the show is getting is specific to it, and how much of it is any adaptation of a huge, sprawling, multi-volume saga being turned into television would be? So is there any specific choices you can point to that Benioff and Weiss, the two showrunners, have done that you agree with, or that you completely say that they got it wrong?
The Arya Sansa thing doesn't make any sense at all, right?
Like, what do you mean by the Arya Sansa?
The way it resolves is like a TV resolution, right? It's the kind of resolution that, like, in fact, the entire
like a Law and Order one,
absolutely. I mean, so Sansa sort of enumerates the charges against the person who's accused, and then she turns and says, "Lord Baelish," and everyone goes,
"But psych, like, psych, psych."
He would never be posted up against the wall like that, right? If he wasn't, if he was the accused, right? He would have been in the like. It was so. Everything about it was like, this is the big reveal. It felt like a TV reveal. Like the whole structure of that scene felt like a TV reveal.
Well, and they're not TV
like,
writers,
but
right?
But it's TV.
They wanted to surprise
us.
They
set it up deliberately.
Wouldn't have had that conversation too, Arya and Sansa, before, where she finds the masks of the whatever. And they like, that was too much
that's exactly right.
Wait a minute.
I mean,
what if the conversation that she had with Littlefinger about what's the worst motivation? That's what changed her. What if it hasn't always been this plot between the two sisters? What if that's what changed her mind?
It wasn't him leading into the constant rapage?
Well, there is also
I mean, that's the other thing, like that suddenly we realize this season that Sansa is the, you know, the heir to Cersei's brilliant plotting. Well, did she just suddenly wake up and become that? Because this has been a real bad couple seasons for her. If she didn't notice that Littlefinger was like dragging her around a wintry hell, by now. I just, like, that was not the moment.
Absolutely. Tasha, I got the sense you weren't as offended by that as others were.
Well, I wasn't offended by the staging of the trial because the staging of the trial was deliberate. I did think it was the conversation between them in private mm-hmm. in no way leads to what happens in public.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that kind of thing this season where you can kind of spackle over the cracks. The thing that bothered me most, I think, was the trek to the wall or the trek past the wall.
Sorry, it's so funny.
The trip to pick up a white. Okay, so these characters are walking and walking and walking mm-hmm. and having all of these conversations mm-hmm. that are beautiful, important conversations mm-hmm. where they acknowledge their history and their past. And that kind of montage, taken over time, interspersed with other things, tells us in a television show that time is passing, possibly mm-hmm. days, possibly weeks, we don't know. And then they run into trouble and they tell Gendry, run back to the wall, which he does in mm-hmm. 2 minutes.
Right.
And I'm like, I mean, we only saw 15 minutes of conversation elapse. Maybe they're 15 minutes away from the wall and can just run
back. We never even saw them build a fire.
Right.
Like, no one ate a sandwich.
Nobody eats in Westeros unless they're trying to make a point.
Yeah, that's true. Like holding a thing.
There's just so much sense in this season of, I don't have any sense of how much time has elapsed. And that's okay, except when it's very plot important how much time has elapsed
mm-hmm. okay.
and you never get around to explaining it.
Now, I think I've identified a through line. I might have not identified a crux here. What we're all talking about is the difference between what this show was doing in its first few seasons, which was strict adaptation, mm-hmm. and what it's doing now, which is basically fan fiction, correct?
Yes, that's true. One thing that I thought in the first couple seasons, which was, I don't think it was, I mean, it was stricter than it is now, but it wasn't like Harry Potter cover band strict. You know what I mean? It was, you know, there were some smart decisions made. Like, you got to pick Lady Stoneheart or Benjen. You got to pick some things. And there were too many plot accessories in the books because you can do that.
Right.
And that's what people are expecting. And so I do think that they actually pared it down in a better way. The first couple seasons was the perfect balance between those, actually. Mm. And there were a lot of things about it that I was like, oh, yeah, this is genuinely better. I mean, I don't think we needed to, like, kill every woman and rape everything. But, you know, that's just like what happens when a couple dudes make a TV show for HBO.
That is Benioff and Weiss's house words.
Yeah.
Kill every woman and rape everything.
Yeah.
To piggyback off of what Tasha said, though, about the whole, like, ranging beyond the wall, that plot line exists only basically to get an ice dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And everything about that plot line felt really stupid once we get to that point, you're like, oh, so they did all of this just so we can have this, like, this little, like, money shot here.
This TV moment, yeah.
Yeah, it just felt...
And you couldn't have come up with anything better in the room to make an ice dragon? Nobody
Absolutely.
Else was like, could he fly over here? I mean, and I was into Daenerys' fur coat. I was like, that might be worth it. But I still, like, there was no better way to get there than this seven group of people. You know, we didn't even lose a major character,
right.
which we clearly should have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the body count is astonishingly low.
Yes.
I think that's going to change in this very short eighth season, which was only six episodes long. But I think folks need to die.
Mm.
So I am a Tolkien stan, right? Mm. And I empathize with their need to kind of drill down and take all of this sprawling, huge mythology and tell a straightforward story. So, you know, when the Lord of the Rings films came out and Tom Bombadil was not in it, a little part of me was like, well, you know, he actually represents the natural world and the magic of the natural world, so that's a nice contrast. But,
listener, I rejoiced.
Yeah. But I get this saga is just nothing but Tom Bombadils. There's all kinds of Tom Bombadils, and so all these characters are being just collapsed, and all these storylines are being collapsed. Now, speaking of Tolkien, so anybody who tries to hand you these books, the first thing they say is, it's a world of moral ambiguity. It's non-Tolkien. There's no good versus evil. What it is, if it's anything, it's kind of hardness versus softness. All the qualities of what we normally associate with a hero, compassion, honor, are the things that get you killed, right? Mm-hmm. Or suffer. There's mm-hmm. lots of suffering in these books. Mm-hmm. And in the show, for the first few seasons, mm-hmm. and now, there's ice zombies, right?
Yeah.
So moral ambiguity, internecine struggles, evil, unstoppable ice zombies.
Right.
So what's happening there? What do you think the end game of this thing is going to be? Right now, we're kind of going to get a little bit of both, I think, in this last season. Mm-hmm. There's going to be the Great War up north, but meanwhile, Cersei's doing all her shady dealings down below. So where do you guys feel? What do you want from the final season?
I'm really fine with the show not being around performative suffering right now.
Good.
I feel like we've had enough torture and rape and rape torture and marriages that consist entirely of torture rape. I think that if the show had always been what it was this season, it would not be as big of a phenomenon as it is. I don't think that fast-forwarded, clear-cut, good versus evil, life versus death story where the main characters all have plot armor would have become as much of a phenomenon. So we needed a lot of what we got in the early going. I don't think that we needed nearly as much torture as we got. And so I'm fine with us moving to a place where, given that things are accelerated, they're also simplified in the good versus evil face-off. I think that's part of narrowing down a story that used to be about a world to a story that is now about a small group of people trying to save that world.
I would agree. I do think, though, that was really well done in the first seasons and is now the thing that's missing now, is that even if we're going to simplify the story, this was a group of characters that behaved in the way that, like, psychologically realistic characters in fiction behave. And so now that we've lost some of that, the Arya Sansa is a great example of that. So is the, you know, Danny and John couldn't, like, brush fingers before that a couple times. Like, he couldn't, like, be like, nice fur coat. Like, there was no, like, the lack of chemistry and psychological realism that has, you know, really been the hallmark of the seasons before. It can be simplified and still retain those things. And that is the thing, I guess, that I'm worried about, is can you back up enough to make it good again? Because now so many things have gone so quickly, like, oh, Rhaegar, Lyanna, you know, that it's kind of that I don't know how we're going to get back to those motivations. Like, many of these characters are doing things that don't make sense. You know, Theon, that's not good storytelling. So I don't know how you go backwards, which is why a part of me is like, well, I guess if the Ice Dragon's going to kill everything, we can just start from scratch.
Yeah, well, that might be on the table.
But so that's the, I mean, that's the thing. I want it simplified. But I still want it to be psychologically complex.
I don't think Ice Dragon destroying everything is on the table. I think, if anything, what we've seen with Benioff and Weiss is that they go for simpler, more direct, more TV solutions. I just don't think that this is going to end. With Martin, there was always sort of that question. I mean, I have read a lot of Martin, and I do think that he believes in honor and justice and morality. He just believes that they're very hard and very painful to achieve. I think this story was always going to resolve for the good guys. It was just going to be a Pyrrhic victory.
Right.
I think with Benioff and Weiss, there is no question that some of the favorites will still be alive and that the Ice Dragon is not going to burn the world.
I was thinking about what you just said about, like, the way people are writing Theon, but, like, we get the introduction of, like, Euron this season, right? Who was just, and this show has had other just straight sociopaths before. That was Joffrey, that was Ramsay Bolton. We get this dude who is basically there to, I don't know, to, like, sort of glower and to, like,
to twirl his mustache.
Absolutely, to, like, chew up scenery.
And then, like, maybe go off and join a band.
Right.
Like, when he walked off, I was like, oh, he has a show.
When the last episode, when he walks off, and obviously we realize now that he, you know, he's, like, secretly plotting with Cersei, but when he walks off, it's like, why the hell we spend all this time with this cat, right? You know, like, I mean, I do think that one of the things the show does, like, sort of, even when it tries to mess up, is that, like, it does have really good actors. Like, Cersei in anyone else's hands besides Lena Headey would just be just a rote supervillain.
The one note.
Absolutely.
Really. Right.
She imbues that character with so many, just like the line readings and the, when Jamie walks away from her in the last episode, it was like, I was like, oh, that's actually, there was actually pain there, even though she's clearly a monster.
Right.
And she's just like a way more interesting villain than the White Walkers are. And I don't know how you resolve her storyline. I mean, she's obviously, the prophecy says she's going to get killed by someone.
I think we know
who.
I'd love it if the prophecy wasn't a thing, because, I mean, prophecies aren't. So let's not make them, you know, just because it's a story. Last question I'm going to go around. Do you have a specific hope for the final season? Is there a specific thing you want to see, in a specific exchange you want to have happen? I want Euron to die in pain.
Yeah.
Just
for wasting our time.
This is so completely just wallowing in self-indulgence, and I apologize, but I just want to go a little bit back. I want to see more Rhaegar, Lyanna backstory. I know, like, I'm the only person that's like, more exposition on backstory. It would be great. And I apologize for that, but I want more. For me, the show is really good when we get more Wars of the Roses, like Targaryen kind of deal. And I definitely, I want more of that. And then one thing I just, because this is a thing that bugs me so much, is that I would like someone in the last season to acknowledge that it wasn't just Ned Stark who died. That there was a little thing called
Kev.
The mom.
Absolutely.
That nobody gave, who
Thank
not
you.
Only, like, like poor Callie, like,
oh
not only
God.
Did she give birth to all these people, but
oh
this guy
God.
Brought a baby home that wasn't even hers.
Know,
and she was like, okay, I'm just going to be a little bit cold, but that's it. Otherwise, I'm going to feed him. Like, she, I just want, like, a shot of her grave.
Furious
you know
yes.
what I mean? With, like, a sad yes. something. Like, yeah, Team Catelyn.
Sansa and Arya, like, standing on the ramparts, like, oh, father, we miss him. So it's like,
yeah.
this woman
yep.
right.
literally held this family together after your father was beheaded.
God, yep. because he was a dummy,
Yeah, he was an
way.
Idiot.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, Jean, specific hope.
I mean, at this point, I kind of want everyone to die. Like, just because I feel like they've dodged so many bullets, I don't want everyone to die. But it feels like there were so many times this season when, like, where it made sense for her. That scene with Tyrion and Cersei was great.
Mm-hmm.
He should have died. Mm-hmm. Jon Snow has, like, literally circumvented death more than a few times. I would like the plot armor to just fall. So, I mean, I wouldn't be... Tyrion is, like, everyone's favorite, so he probably won't die.
Mm-hmm.
But he should die. The thing I don't want to happen is, like, the whole Jon Snow was really a Targaryen thing to, like, mean that one of these people, like, takes over the throne, right? Like,
right.
And, like, I just don't want him, like, to end up as, like, this, like, god. Or, like, this, like,
yes.
or this, like, benevolent king. I don't want Daenerys to get the throne. I think the show has sort of indicted that system so much that any resolution that gets us to somebody sitting on the throne and being this, like... this very noble and magnanimous
right.
leader is like the wrong solution.
You want somebody to break the wheel.
right.
Which, let's put that phrase in the same place we put bend the knee and just sit
down.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, yeah. Tasha.
Bend the wheel, man.
Bend the wheel. Tasha, what's your specific hope for the final season?
Well, okay, so everything that Jean just said, the opposite of that.
Oh, really?
I want not all of those things. Mostly what I want, I have a few favorite characters and always have, and Tyrion and Brienne are tops on that list.
Mm-hmm.
I want more of them. I do not care what man Brienne ends up with. There's been a lot of Brienne shipping. I don't care. She's not about men. She's
yeah.
about trying to protect people and defend her
and
honor
Catelyn.
And be an
Sorry.
Awesome knight.
Yeah. She is.
I want more of her. If she dies nobly, that's fine. If she gets a happy ending, that's fine. As long as that happy ending is not, oh, and here is your romance.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrion was always George R. R. Martin's favorite character, and he used to do things that weren't stupid.
Yeah.
And this season, he's just been all about dumb advice and sitting in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to do something useful. I want him to be useful again. I want him to have a happy ending. Not necessarily because he deserves it, because he's kind of an awful person like they all are, but that is what I want for him.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so we have these giant hopes and only 2 years in which to nurture them, because we're looking at 2019 at least. That brings us to the end of the show. We want to know what you think of the Game of Thrones finale. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. Also, if you like the show, I know everyone says this, but please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners discover the show. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
And we will see you next time.